3, 2, 1. This is the Insiders Podcast.
My hope is that we'll get regulated, better laws will come into place where they no longer treat it as a controlled substance, but just as another medicine that's in a toolkit for doctors and patients to make their own decisions.
If you're in the legal cannabis community, you might know him as Alex the Chemist. Now, in the mushroom community, he's known as Chief Research Officer Alexander Samuelson of Haven Life. Here's catching up with an old friend. I hope you enjoy.
Welcome to the Insiders Podcast.
You know, I really enjoyed the work I did with Nextleaf, and it was an amazing opportunity for me. And I thank Paul Peterson and all the others in that company, because it really did give me an opportunity to have some stability here in Vancouver, provided me with a job, a stable salary. And once the company was going public, I kind of realized that I had bigger ambitions. You know, not to say that I couldn't have fulfilled them there, but I kind of wanted to do other things. And so after that, I had created my own consulting company, Development Catalyst Strategy Corp Incorporated. And I had done a couple of different contracts, mostly on advising equipment, floor plans, and just other little things like that, small contracts. And I got the opportunity to go to Uzbekistan, an opportunity from David Hyde, who's very well known and well regarded in the industry.
Yeah, I remember those pictures.
He had met somebody in Malta named Damon Booth, and he had a company called Melibus. Okay. And they needed a chemist or biochemist to go to Uzbekistan to make a presentation to present to the Ministry of, which was a jurisdiction, Farming Committee. And so within a week, I had learned of this opportunity, and then was on a plane to Uzbekistan. And when I hit the land in Uzbekistan, we get off the plane, and I was just like, oh my God, what did I just do?
Yeah,
like, I don't know anybody here. Like, I talked to this guy, Damon, once on the phone, and then it was a couple of emails, and now I'm here. But it was, you know, I'm a bit of a cowboy that way. And I just have that kind of impulsivity and a sense of adventure. And that really was a great experience, because in a week, I understood the Uzbeki position on hemp and cannabis,
okay,
created a custom presentation, presented it, had the translator go line by line as I was saying it. Jeez. To the committee. And they were all like stoic Soviets. They said, Alex, don't smile. Stop smiling. Like when we were doing all the practicing. And yeah, that was an experience. Then after that, did another couple of contracts with various companies around the planet. I had a formulation contract in Los Angeles, EV Labs. These little pearls are kind of like half the size of a Tic Tac. I think there's 7 SKUs, and I did the formulations for those.
Wow.
And that won a CBD award down there. Oh. I didn't get anything for that, but hey, it's, you know, it's fun. It's fun to know. It's an honor. And then, you know, fast forward to, I guess the current project I'm on now, which is Haven Life, which had evolved from an original idea in January of 2020 to basically a mushroom LP, if you want to use that terminology.
That's the way I've thought about it, for sure. But I mean, yeah. I had thought that you guys were doing research only on psilocybin, but you guys have a line of health products as well. Things like turkey tail, things like lion's mane, you know, like chaga, the whole kind of lineup of mushrooms.
So, well, that actually kind of was an idea from myself and the other founders, Brinder, Susan, Robert, Ivan, Natasha. We all kind of thought, like, how can we make this sustainable? Because having the experience in cannabis where you have a company and then you sit and wait for the licensing for, you know, who knows? Now it's actually a lot longer, not only because of COVID, but a lot of companies are applying for dealer's license to be able to grow and extract the psilocybin out of the mushrooms. So we kind of thought as NHP as a offering to grow revenues while this other labs division was getting licensed. And this was prior to us thinking of even going to Jamaica.
Right.
And, you know, it was ups and downs. It was a wild ride, let me tell you. You know, I'm a scientist, and, you know, now becoming like a business person who's also a scientist, it's a whole nother world, like the capital markets and deal making and all that. I try and stay away from as much of that as possible and just focus on what I know and love.
Yeah.
But it's definitely how companies are built, structured, evolve over time. It's been a real education for me.
is it even possible for magic mushrooms to hit the legal market in any, you know, reasonable amount of time, or is that 10 years in the future?
Yeah, the if you ask 10 different people in the industry, you're going to get 10 different answers with different rationales I've found. And I think that the work that Therasil is doing is foundational. They've recently put together some proposals for government bureaucrats to look at, policymakers to look at, and try and get an idea of what this might look like. I think that if there's going to be any kind of recreational component, that's going to be quite some time. I think much like cannabis, you kind of have to bring it into the medical sphere, authorize doctors to be able to give the authorization to patients so that they can use these. And then you're going to have an industry that supplies a safe amount. One of the details that you don't really hear about is you have these patients that were given exemptions to consume, mostly palliative care. Some are now starting to get into more treatment-resistant depression. I think there is at least one patient who was given an exemption for that. But where are you going to get the supply from it? You know, it's kind of like a big question. So if we're going to continue giving these exemptions, there has to be a supply.
Yeah.
So there has to be an industry, a medical industry, to serve that. And my hope is that we'll get regulated, better laws will come into place where they no longer treat it as a controlled substance, but just as another medicine that's in a toolkit for doctors and patients to make their own decisions.
Yeah.
You know, I'm optimistic that within 5 years, we'll have a regulation change, but that's up to the policymakers.
So how are you guys trying to make that happen? What kind of research are you doing specifically?
So there's a couple of different ways. It really focuses on the form. So if you've had mushrooms, you know that there's some really good benefits to it, but there's also some, you know, things like your stomach. Some people can get really nauseous, and you know that exists on a scale.
Yeah.
I now don't get too much stomach upsetness.
Yeah.
There's also some slight dysphoria in the head or the energy. But if you've ever had either synthetic psilocybin or certain extracts of psilocybin, then you'll find that it's a lot cleaner. There's a different feel to it, and that can really shape the overall experience that you have. So the research that I'm engaging in specifically is taking the mushrooms, extracting it, and then crystallizing the psilocybin, and then further purifying that to an API standard. So somewhere above 99.5%+ of purity. An API stands for active pharmaceutical ingredient.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm trying to get the psilocybin API, after which I'll focus on psilocin API, which is less stable in air and light. And then eventually I'd love to have each of the different strains of mushrooms. This would be like Golden Teacher, Blue Meanie, different types. So each one of these will have different characteristics, much like cannabis has different characteristics based on the cannabinoid profile and the terpene profile. Mushrooms will have their own set of pharmacologically active chemicals that are the tryptamines, and those are kind of like the cannabinoid analogy. And then there's other compounds within the mushrooms that we know of that will either potentiate or modify that experience. Beta-carbolines is one group of compounds so basically I have a compound library where I say this strain will produce these types of tryptamines and these secondary compounds and really understand the pharmacology of what's in there.
Yeah.
And once we have that, researchers can say, well, I want this novel or this rare tryptamine called oregenosine in a high amount. So then we could grow a mushroom that has that chemical in there, extract it, purify it, and make it available for researchers, clinical studies, and eventually medical patients.
Would you envision that mushrooms would be grown naturally as medicine, or would they end up being synthetic? Would that be kind of be the approach you guys would take in the long run?
We believe that most consumers want to have a natural alternative.
Okay.
There's two different ways you can get psilocybin these days. Synthetic, which there are companies that will make the synthetic, and I'm for synthetic. I'm for natural. I think that there's a use case for either, and really it should be up to the patient on what form they want. As a chemist, psilocybin is psilocybin. However, some people want to have it from a natural source for one reason or another, and I think, you know, you're entitled to that.
How many strains do you guys work with?
We have about 15 or so that we're working with, and we're focusing on a few of the highest producers to generate the most psilocybin. The more psilocybin in the mushroom, the better it is for me to extract it and then crystallize it.
Well, just for the people out there who like mushrooms, can you rank like what you would think would be the top three in terms of the most psilocybin in a mushroom?
So this would be a great question to ask my colleague, the chief psychedelic officer, Dr. Ivan Castleman. But he's working on the cultivation side, whereas I'm working more on the extraction side. There exists a range of different species for the average of tryptamines that they'll produce. And it'll go anywhere from the more common psilocybe cubensis species of about 0.5% to 0.65%. So very little, up to about 1 to 1.5% in some higher species. Then if you want to add on another layer of interest, you can spike the mediums with different compounds, and the mushroom will take those and create something either new with it or increase the tryptamine count.
Ooh,
okay. And so that's an interesting area of research as well. It's much like if you have a cannabis plant and you don't feed it the right things, yeah, you're still going to get high from it, but yeah. You know, it's not going to be the best experience. Whereas if you give it the right stuff and figure out what that organism wants, then you can make it produce higher yields and increase the experience. Like I've had mushrooms where I'll take like 3 grams and it feels like 1 gram of something that's way stronger.
Right.
So it varies wildly, much like what you would get in the gray market or the medicinal market in cannabis in the early days.
Yeah.
So trying to understand what those variables are and how we can encourage the mushrooms to increase the yield of things that we want in there is really fascinating. Right now we're really focused on just getting the operations running smoothly.
Yeah.
This is actually why I went to Jamaica, because we have our application for our dealer's license. So when we found out that there are other companies that were already in Jamaica growing mushrooms, because mushrooms there, the psilocybin type, are treated exactly as agricultural products. Oh. So the button mushrooms or the magic mushrooms will give you two vastly different effects, but they're treated the same legally.
Okay. In a clinical setting, where would you source different strains from to begin your research?
Yeah, so there are a lot. There's already somewhat of an industry down there. So obtaining spores is not a big issue. You can also import them as well. And we've imported spores. We've got spores from there. We've worked with different mushroom species to see which ones work best. And yeah, there's different morphological changes. Like some of them, you can almost see that they're more potent because they're extremely blue-black, whereas other ones, there's a little bit, but very little. The favorite place I've harvested mushrooms is from a donkey shit pile in the Hope Zoo, which is the zoo in Kingston, because I'm friends with the curator,
yeah.
And he brought me around, and he's like, oh, yeah, well, these donkeys back here, there's mushrooms growing on the pile. I'm like, can I see?
Yeah.
And so we went over there, and yeah, sure enough, and when you take the mushroom and you look at the stem, you kind of like blow on it for a minute or so, and that creases the oxidation, and if it starts to turn a bluish, darkish blue,
yeah,
then it's a good sign that there's psilocybin in there. Not always, because there are some false blueing, or yeah. It's not from psilocybin, but it's usually a good indicator.
Well, picking your own mushrooms can be risky if you don't know what you're doing. How familiar are you now that you've been researching them for a few years? Are you able to walk up and identify most mushrooms that have psilocybin or ones that are edible? Or is that just an ongoing process of learning?
It's very much ongoing. I take a lot of forest walks and I take pictures every single time. And I can pick out, some novel ones like Xylaria. They look like more finger-like. There's different types of polypores, or like the conchs that are on the trees, and they don't really look like a mushroom per se. And then you have different slime molds or yellow jellies. I forget the species name of those.
Those
but
are edible,
I always
right?
try. I think so,
the
but don't quote me on that one.
I think I've tried them. I might be wrong, but they're more orange in color, but they look kind of like little jelly balls growing on a tree, and they just tasted like water.
Yeah, but they come in all kinds of shapes and sizes and colors, especially living on in the Pacific Northwest. We're blessed here with blooms of different types of mushrooms throughout the year.
Now that you're in the business, are you more of a connoisseur, and are you particular about strains that you enjoy? If so, can you name one or two that work for you for any particular reason?
Yeah, so actually, I have a very disappointing answer to this question.
Oh, no.
I don't really do mushrooms very often.
Okay.
It's a kind of a rare occurrence. And for any authorities listening, it's mostly in Jamaica because it's legal there.
Yeah,
for any authorities. But microdosing, no, not even. Hey, go right ahead. Okay. Microdosing is something that I feel will have a lot more. People will take to that a lot more than, taking more than 1 gram
yeah.
in experiences.
Yeah.
Whenever I have a psychedelic experience, LSD is my favorite. I'll probably do that once or twice a year because, there's something about cherishing the experience
right.
and I feel that when I go into the experience, it gives me a lot to think about and a lot of feelings to sort through.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I'm really serious about the integration component of any type of psychedelic therapy. So, you know, cannabis is, you know, my semi-daily love, same thing as caffeine. Even though I've tried to break those, those relationships off a couple of times.
Can't break those.
They always seem to just, you know, come back. If you're in modern society, you need something to help calm you down. But, yeah. When it comes to the psychedelics, you know, I really respect them. And, you know, I can't really give too much of a meaningful answer on which strains I would prefer.
Let me rephrase it then. When it comes to microdosing, in your opinion, which strains would you guess would probably end up being more commonly used or more popular with more research?
I can tell you that Golden Teacher is one that is widely distributed. There's other ones, Penis Envy, Blue Meanie, B Plus is another one that I see floating around quite a bit, PFC. And again, this would be more, you know, Ivan would be all over this because he's dealing with a lot of the strains and the cultivation.
Yeah.
But those are definitely ones I see floating around.
In the microdose world that you're talking about specifically?
Okay. You know, it's not specifically microdoses. But these are the ones I see people consuming.
These days, just like cannabis too, when you purchase psilocybin mushrooms, now people are much more particular about the strain they buy.
It's very much like cannabis in the 90s.
Yeah.
Well, what I found interesting is how the gray market has shifted in cannabis. And a lot of people who I know on the gray side had shifted to mushrooms.
Yeah.
Because it, you know, if they wanted to get into the legal side, Dan Sutton is actually leading the charge right now on excise tax. The way that the government had structured the Cannabis Act and, you know, the taxes levied and the fees and insurance, you know, I think that there's, you know, certain insurance deposits that they have to make with even the retailer distribution, like the liquor boards. So, you know, I hear all these things. And it's like, yeah, they're not really supporting or helping the industry. So a lot of the people who were previously in the gray market who were thought to be incentivized to come into the legal industry didn't. Some of them didn't. And they switched their focus to mushrooms. And now you see online dispensaries for mushrooms.
Yeah.
There are secret websites. There are, here in Vancouver, at least two dispensaries that I know of that sell mushrooms. I was on a late night walk the other night and I passed by one on Granville and I literally did that comical thing where you're walking and you're not really paying attention. All of a sudden, like, you see mushrooms, like, whoa, like you stop, you're like, whoa, like you go inside. I'm like, my eyes are big because I'm seeing all these products and I'm taking pictures and I'm asking questions. And, you know, it's fascinating to see that, like, yeah, this is kind of like the new thing, the new, you know.
It is the new thing. And it's not just like buying straight mushrooms these days, the gummies and the chocolates and all that stuff. It's way more pro than ever before. Now you can buy packages, just like the gray market gummies that hit the market and they had like professional packaging and flavors and all that. Now you're seeing that with mushrooms.
Yeah, and you can get it in all the forms, dried mushrooms, powdered, gummies, chocolates, sodas I saw in there.
Mushroom sodas?
Sodas, yeah. Well, psilocybin is what. Psilocybin is water soluble, so it kind of works.
Yeah, I guess.
I'd worry about the stability over time. That's the only thing.
Well,
that's the
again,
thing you think about when you're like, a scientist.
Just like when you eat cannabis, though, if you're conscious of dose, you can dial it in. So same thing with all these packages. I know that they're gray market, so they may not be perfect, but you can buy 1 gram of Golden Teachers in something that looks and tastes like a s'mores bar or whatever. And it's amazing these days, the options out there.
Yeah, yeah. I'm, you know, as a bystander on the side, seeing this happen, I think it's very interesting. Mm-hmm. And it's tracking similarly to cannabis. And you'll hear a lot of people in the psychedelic space analogizing to cannabis. And I think it is a good framework. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to be the same pathway, but there will be similarities. And I really hope that it kind of has the same end, where you have a liberation of this from being a controlled substance, which is viewed as inherently negative,
yeah,
to now that we see it can be very positive for a lot of people. And yeah, I think it just takes a little bit of political will and support from the community and from people.
Yeah.
And I'm really hoping that the Liberal government, especially Nathan Erskine Smith, I probably butchered that, but he's a really cool guy. He's very pro drugs. He's very pro drug liberation, I should say, to regulate them. And I'm hoping that his voice and others will rise up to try and shift so that we can have this really be a decision between your doctor and you.
Yeah, well, I'll have to be a pessimist, perhaps with a medical stream. Agreed 100%. I'm just not sure society is ready to now jump into acceptance of recreational mushroom sales and use in the legal market. I just don't know if people can wrap their heads around that yet. I think a lot of people are just getting used to cannabis being legal. So to propose that we right away jump into mushrooms, I'd say let's do this now. My guess is 30 years, man.
30?
Like I said, I'm going to be a pessimist. For just recreational, walk into a store and buy a chocolate bar from a legal store. I don't know, man.
Well, Michael, you officially have you are the horizon of the years. It's usually about 2, 3, 5. Oh, no. 10 years. I've heard 15 years.
Maybe. You know what? Yeah. I'll keep doing them on my own, but I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. I just don't. It's going to be way too much work to normalize them into, society. What's next for you in 2022?
You know, it's funny. I'm thinking about that right now. And it's going to be Haven for sure. But I don't know what else is going to come out of the pipeline. Haven for me, like this is... I'm a founder of this company and I'm the chief research officer. So I have a really good position, a position I'm very proud of. And it's one that I helped develop with friends and colleagues, which I have a vast amount of respect and admiration. So Haven is the short answer. But if you know me, I've got ADD. I can't just do one thing. And, Melibus, which I'm also the chief science officer of, will be growing hemp in Uzbekistan. We actually were awarded the only cultivation license in Uzbekistan. Damon is heading back there next week they're actually clearing land, farmland, cotton fields. We're replacing cotton fields to put hemp there, which will be better for the environment. Certainly Haven, Melibus, and we'll see how this whole COVID thing, we're in the twilight of this, and we're going to come to a dawn of new policies where we open back up, which I'm hoping. You'll see me around the world because now I've got the resources to do so. I'm going to go explore. I'm going to see what's out there. But I'm always going to be committed to Haven, meeting our goals, and to be the best representative of the psychedelic industry I can.
Well, you're a fun guy to watch, man. I love following you on Twitter, seeing your pictures, seeing where you're going. Hope it keeps rolling for you, brother.
Oh man, I feel very blessed and grateful. And there's a lot of people that helped me along the way, and that's why I always try and help others where and when I can.
Hey man, you were one of the first people to ever reach out to me and offer to help me out with the podcast early in my life. So thank you for that.
Oh, wonderful. Well, you know what? I love to see people grow and expand, and to be on this podcast again after many years and a catch up. It makes me feel really good. So it's very positive.
Well, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, Michael, always a pleasure. Anytime, brother.
Okay, man, take care. Huge shout out to Alex for joining us and talking a bit about the world of legal mushroom research. You can follow Alex on Twitter at AlexTheChemist. And to find out more about Haven Life, go to Haven, HAVNLife.com. Thanks so much.